You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm one of the co-hosts of this wonderful podcast, and it is a Friday. There is basketball tonight. Get excited. On today's show, I will be bringing you three things. One, we'll talk TJ Leaf's fourth-year option being picked up by the Pacers, preview tonight's Bulls game, which is on a Friday night, and we'll preview Doug McDermott's season. So let's get right to it. TJ Leaf will return to the Pacers next season, I guess, for now, barring some crazy trade or whatnot. Not even crazy trade, or just being traded, frankly. So his fourth-year option was picked up by the team, I think unsurprisingly. It will pay him $4.3 million roughly next year, a little bit above that. And this makes sense. Pacers are hard cap next year no matter what, pretty much. So you look at the next year's salaries. Assuming Sabonis signs some extension, we're talking somewhere between probably $15 to $20 million range. Assuming that he comes back, they'll be at 100, let's say, 21 to 126 in salary, which the cap, even without this whole China stuff, it's probably projected to be somewhere like in the 116-117 range. Obviously, if this China stuff goes awry and it keeps heading down the path it's currently heading, the cap could go down next year for the first time in a long time in the NBA. But I think Tony and I will try to address that whole issue on Monday's podcast. So kind of skip that over for now. And it makes sense. I mean, at $4.3 million, it's basically kind of a room exception player. They have no way to replace him, for example. So, like, let's say they lose that $4.3 million. They have no way to actually go out and get a guy for that. Like, because they will still have the ability next year to use the MLE, because they'll be above the cap for two straight years, the mid-level exception. So, it honestly just makes sense. And worst-case scenario is he doesn't play next year, but you can make a move. If you think about it, if you add McDermott's salary, his salary, and a Sabonis or Turner at, like, 18, you get about $30 million, which equals the value of a top max level player. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I mean, that's the kind of things you need. I mean, we're talking too that same way. If you put Leaf and you put like a Warren Lamb and Dirt together, you get the same kind of concept of about $30 million. And that's what it needs to get. So, you know, you need guys who can kind of become almost salary filler in trades because you need them to match up like that. Plus, we haven't seen Leaf this season. I previewed to your Leaf on a previous podcast and I thought he might have a decent year. We could see. The Pacers are playing Sabonis at the four, need to find a stretch four or four off the bench. Right now it's going to either be him or McDermott, but maybe Leaf becomes something we didn't expect. He makes an improvement in his third year, and all of a sudden he is able to maybe be a borderline starter, and then that $4.3 million is a bargain, and then we're talking extension next summer for him. So I just think it makes sense logistically in terms of just the cap movements. There's just no reason not to. I mean, if you view this money as kind of monopoly money anyways, it's money that you could save $4.3 million, but you can't replace the roster spot anyways. And as long as, you know, the Simons are okay paying that, which considering their net worth, I'm sure they are, it makes sense. Having TJ Leaf just makes sense in the pure cap sense, and it is a risk worth taking because if you think about it, $4.3 million is less than 4% of the cap, essentially, assuming it's going to be somewhere in like the 110s next year. It makes no sense not to do that because there are plenty of players you can get at 4.3 who still wouldn't play, and at least with Leaf, you know what you're getting. You might get a chance of him playing 5, 10 minutes in the rotation. And speaking of Leaf, he will most likely make his preseason debut tonight against the Bulls. I could change, so I'm recording this podcast at about 11 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. There's a report in the Star that he could be starting. I think we'll see. Obviously, he'll have to test out his, I believe it's calf, that was hurt before. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that one. I know it's something with his leg, so we'll see. We'll see how he plays in that game. Obviously, he was not given the opportunity to put up these huge stats like all the other guys in the Pacers during the first two games they played in India. I think that's kind of also where. So I think whether Leaf plays or not is a huge kind of thing to watch for tonight's game against the Bulls. If he does play, it's, who does he play with, one? Does he get, you know, some minutes with Turner, or is he playing with Sabonis? Or maybe he's, you know, is that what he's doing? We'll have to kind of see who he's playing with, how productive he is, who he's playing against, stuff like that. But I think that's kind of one of the three things to watch is Leaf. Another guy I'm kind of watching for in that kind of same sense is Jakarr Sampson, who I thought maybe was the most impressive or surprising kind of revelation in those first two preseason games. I just think he was like something that, I mean, we didn't expect. I think he had maybe a heat check game. I think Alize, too, is in the same kind of sense. Could be both guys could be mentioned in the same breath. But, I mean, I think those are kind of what I'm watching for because I expect the starters to not play a ton of minutes. I'm going to assume, especially Sabonis to Turner, having spent time in Japan or China, then coming back to the U.S., then back out to India, that they're probably a little bit jet-lagged. And so there might be a chance you just see them play a little bit of minutes and then just try to get them rested up. Obviously, won't see any Vic tonight. Warren played 26 minutes per game in India, so maybe we probably won't see him a ton. I just doubt we'll see a lot of the starters play a ton of minutes. You're going to see a lot of these backbench and two-ways guys get a chance to just play. So the Sampsons, the Alizés, the Brian Bowens, the Amita Brimas, probably the McConnells, those kind of guys, maybe Aaron Holiday, the Leaf, those kind of guys are trying to make a push for the rotation and get a lot of minutes. So I think that's kind of what to watch for. Are those guys going to be good? If they are good, what is real and what isn't real, I think depends on kind of who the Bulls play, too. In the same sense, the Bulls have also played two games. They're scoring about 120 points per game. Zach LaVine has played about 24 minutes and scored 22 a game. At one point, Zach LaVine last year was averaging like almost 28 points per game, I think, at one point. So LaVine is a scorer. He's actually not shooting the worst. He's shooting 51 and 53 from the field and from three. So pretty solid for those two preseason games for him. Obviously, I don't know how much that matters also. But, you know, the Bulls are an up-and-coming team. They certainly have some young players that make you think there could be a shot there. They got a shot, between Lauri Markkanen, LaVine, Otto Porter. I guess it's really not up and coming anymore, but it's kind of maybe one of the better kept secrets in the league. Thad Young, obviously, I think as a Pacers fan, we all know he's one of the best kept secrets in the NBA. Maybe not anymore. Now he's making $13 or $14 million. But they have some young talent mixed in with some veteran guys like a Thad Young. So it'll be interesting to see, do the Bulls compete for that 8th seed in the East? I don't think so. But this game could be interesting to see, could be kind of a test for the Pacers in terms of just like, is this team a serious thing they're going to take seriously when it comes to the regular season? Because I think the past, 3-4 years, it pretty easily said that like the Pacers basically own the Bulls. I think they've won the series most of the time. Last year they beat them, 3 out of 4 times. They might have lost once, same way. Then in the year before, last year it was really Miles Turner owned the Bulls a couple times, the big blocks at the end of games. But I don't know. I mean, you have this pull in preseason basketball because I think Dan Devine said this best in The Ringer, where you turn on the game and you try to watch it, but inevitably your eyes turn to something else, think about something else, read something else, just because some of it is not that important. It doesn't mean that much. You're trying to, watch for certain things, but, if a guy goes off for, Jakarr Sampson goes off for, what do you have, 15 or 14 in the last game? Does that really mean anything? He hit a three in the corner and was chirping at the other team's bench, but that was taken out of a back-to-back and all that stuff. Or, when Alize has a heat check moment, does that mean anything? Who knows? I tend to think, great, good job showing something in preseason. There is something to say, if you do well in preseason, you deserve a shot in the regular season, but it doesn't really mean anything in terms of, if you have a good preseason, you're going to have a good regular season. But I think the other thing I'm kind of looking for is the rotations. So do those matter at all? Do the Pacers just kind of trot out things for fun to try out? I mean, we saw the Holidays coming on the court at the same time in India in game two. They just do that because the brothers want to play together. They may not get a chance to really do that. I mean, part of preseason two is you don't want to try things you're going to try in the regular season because you don't want to give them away. But you also want to try things to see if maybe something that you unexpected could work. So, we're talking maybe like a Sabonis Leaf lineup that consists of maybe McDermott at the three and you got Holiday and McConnell. What does that lineup look like, for example? Because that could be that, you probably would not see that very often you might actually see it more than we think, because that could be kind of the bench unit if Goga doesn't become the backup center and Sabonis is playing more backup five. So that could be the case. But I think that's kind of things you might look for, is that kind of lineups. Or even weirder ones where maybe you have Lamb as the point guard, and then you have Lamb, Holiday, McDermott, Leaf, and I don't know, you could probably play Brima in this game. So, that's something to kind of look for. What weird things do they try, and if they work for a little bit, are we going to see them in the regular season? Another thing I'm kind of looking for, probably the last thing I'm kind of looking at, is Malcolm Brogdon. He just kind of stunk. I mean, in terms of, let me rephrase that. He stunk offensively. He just didn't shoot that well. He made some incredible passes. I mean, he averaged 10 assists basically over the two games. So he was definitely showed off that court vision, but he wasn't necessarily like this efficient shooter that he came in being. Two games doesn't mean anything. Absolutely, it doesn't mean shit. I mean, really doesn't. He had, you could say he had two bad games in prison. Who cares? But, you know, if he could go 4 or 5, it might be nice, just kind of a curtain sign heading into the season. I believe the Patriots will have one more preseason game after this against the Timberwolves next week. I mean, we'll see if any starters will play in that one. Interesting to see also in this one if Goga plays. I don't really have any information on what if he's going to play or not. I think any star, J. Michael reported that he's in dangerous in the entire preseason. I would think that's what's going to happen. But we'll see. Leaf, I expect to play. Goga, who knows? For this game, I expect the Pacers to probably lose it, to be honest. I just think they're not going to play their starters very much. I think after the whole traveling thing, it's like they don't want to exhaust their starters and drain them. So I think they play like maybe 10, 15 minutes tops and let them sit on the bench and get a good night's sleep after this game and whatnot. So they'll probably lose. The Bulls, you know, LaVine will score 35 points, whatever. It doesn't really matter. You know, the Pacers will probably still beat the Bulls in the regular series, and that's what will matter. But it's good, exciting to watch basketball. I mean, it's a Friday night, so I mean, a Friday night preseason game, I don't expect every Pacers fan to be watching it. Obviously, if you do watch it, I will be doing some live tweeting from the Locked On Pacers account, and Tony and I will break that all down on our Monday podcast. Speaking of next week, too, we'll be doing we're continuing our player preview series. I believe our Monday show will have a Victor Oladipo preview, but for now, today, I'm going to do Doug McDermott after this quick break. As avid listeners of the Locked On Pacers podcast know, I am not the biggest Doug McDermott fan. McDermott is, at best, an average NBA player or a neutral player where he puts up a really good offensive showing and spaces the floor and then can be nothing on defense. At worst, he's a guy who is 1 for 3 from three during a game and then cannot play on defense and ends up being a negative. Obviously, he had a good year last year, so I he weirdly struggled with three at home, but he finished the year shooting 49, 40, and 83 in shooting splits, so not that, you know, obviously very, that's a very good stat line for most players. Average 7.3 points per game on 17 minutes. I mean, that was fine. When it comes to McDermott, I always think about the kind of the what if, you know. He signed for about $7.3 million per year on a 3-for-22 deal. At the time, I believe Joe Harris signed a contract for 2-for-16, and I always thought, oh, that would have been the better deal. Harris is the kind of guy who plays like 30 minutes a game and averages about 14 points. I mean, you know, who knows if you could get Joe Harris. You know, the Pacers always have to pay kind of the small market tax, right? So, like, Brooklyn is a big market that attracts big free agents, hence by this offseason where the Pacers can never attract that big free agent. And not even a huge free agent, but they pay a tax to just get the average guy. McDermott probably should be getting 3-for-15, but he got 3-for-22 because the Pacers paid the Indiana premium. It's just what it is. It's how this works, unfortunately. So McDermott's role for next year, I don't see it necessarily changing that much. I could see him playing a little more 4 than he did last year. I believe he played 4. I'm going to look it up real fast, but he only played 4. About 30% of the time, I could see that inching more towards the 40-50, depending on how good Leaf is, what the bench units are. So, like, is Sabonis playing center the bench? Is he playing forward off the bench with the bench unit? Is Goga playing minutes? I mean, all that kind of factored into this. But I could see McDermott playing more like 60-40 between small forward and power forward. If he can prove to be just, you know, a decent, like, I mean, not talking decent, I'm talking like just like below average defender, like a slightly below average defender at the 4, he can probably earn himself some minutes with the starters, because I think Pacers are going to be lacking that the spacing at times when they get Oladipo back. You know, I think I could see Pacers definitely going to lineup of like Brogdon, Lamb, Oladipo, Warren, Turner, Sabonis. But I could see the point where instead of being Lamb, it's McDermott, because Lamb is leading the bench unit. But like, that's what I think we could see from the Pacers this year a lot of, just because I think they will not get the same spacing with Sabonis and Turner. Then maybe they can make it up with just those guys being awesome offensive players. But I wonder, in certain instances where you can just get both guys on the bench or one of the guys on the bench and just space the floor out like crazy, that might play to the Pacers' advantage in other moments. Because Vic at his height is somebody who just needs space to move. I mean, he just if you just take 2017-18 Victor Oladipo, what makes him great is that if he can be able to get one-on-one on a even semi-slower defender than him, which most players in the NBA are slower than him, and he could just iso him out, make a couple moves, drive to the rim and score. I mean, that's what Vic would do, and he needed the space, and he was doing that with like Thaddeus Young on the floor, which means he was definitely not getting the space before. So I could see the Pacers doing that. I don't know. I think for me, it's also looking at McDermott is, can he get any better? I mean, he's basically been the same player in the league for the better part of the last 5 years, give or take. I don't think he's going to do anything. I mean, I don't think he's going to be anything more than he's been in the past. You know, he is what he is at this point. He is 28 years old. And the thing is about McDermott is he is what he is, and he's not a bad player. I mean, he deserves to be in the league. He probably deserves to be borderline on a rotation. I just always think you can get more skilled sets out of what you're paying him in that spot. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard. I mean, if he's been the 9th or 10th guy off the bench, I mean, it's hard to get a guy, the 9th or 10th guy off the bench that can put up 8 points a game and shoot an efficient 50-40. So nothing wrong with that. If I had to predict this season, I'm going to make one bold prediction before I give a stat line, actually. I think McDermott will be traded by this time next year. So that doesn't mean necessarily during this season. It could be after the year. But I think the Pacers extend Sabonis. That could blow up. And there's some move with, like, whether it's like a Lamb, Sabonis, Leaf, or Lamb, Sabonis, McDermott, or Lamb, McDermott, Leaf, or some combination of kind of those four guys, somewhere where they trade up for somebody. I don't know. Mike Conley's been the white whale for a while. Obviously, he's off the market. Maybe Drew Holiday is the next white whale that you can go after and get. Although, I think the Pelicans could be good next year, so we'll see how that goes. But I think that's kind of where they're looking. Maybe the Bradley Beal is there. That's the next guy, right? The Bradley Beal is the one they kind of get. I think that McDermott's salary makes sense in the idea that he, on paper, teams like a guy like him, a spacer, stuff like that, provides just room for their young players. And he makes a salary that you could fit into a lot of deals to get to like $30 million, which I think next summer the Pacers are going to be feeling the heat. If they don't have a good season, they have a very kind of average season to go after some big name with Vic as on franchise on the horizon. They're going to need somebody here to kind of entice Vic to stay. Let's put it that way. So that's what I think could happen. Stat line, though, I think he averaged, 7.3 points, 1.4 rebounds, 0.9 assists next year. Like I said, he took 5.5 shots per game, shooting 49 from the field, 40.8 from three, and 83.5 from the line, taking one a game, basically, from the free throw line. I don't see a stat line changing. I even can see him having slightly less points. I mean, I'd like to see him get more to like three threes per game, obviously, on that rate, which if he has averages 40% on three threes a game, you're talking about more like, that's like 3.6 points per game, and then he puts up another two shots and shoots 50%. You're talking about probably like six points. I mean, that's where I see him, I guess, being as the kind of guy who puts up probably between more like 5 and 7 than more on the high end of 7. I don't see him put more rebounds. I don't see him really put in more assists. Maybe more of the hockey assists. Could we see that? They try to bring that out in the preseason game. But if I had to guess right now, I would say like 6 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist per game. I mean, simple stat line. Probably plays between 15 and 17 minutes and probably rarely starts unless there's some rash of injuries. I don't know. I'm just not that high on McDermott going into the year. I think he'll be okay, but I think if you go on the list of guys, right, so when Vic's healthy, the lineup's going to be Brogdon, Vic, Warren, Sabonis, Turner, Lamb's first one off the bench, then Aaron Holiday. Then it's either him, McConnell, Goga, or Justin Holiday. And I think there's a chance he could lose up Justin Holiday just because Justin Holiday's a better creator, but I don't know, McDermott provides that kind of stability, and, you know, it'd be great if McDermott could become kind of the Korver-type player, but I think he's a little bit kind of a poor man's Korver, in my opinion, but we will see what happens. You know, I might be low on McDermott, but I'm high on the rest of the team, and you can listen to all our other player previews going back. I believe we only have 4 or 5 left, so check out our shows next, which will preview a bunch of guys. I think we still have Miles Turner and Oladipo, so some of the big-name guys are still left to preview. So those are the guys you should look forward to. You can follow Locked On Pacers podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at FreedomAdam5. You can follow my co-host, Tony's at Teased NBA. Like I said, I'll be trying to live tweet the Friday Pacers game, or tonight's game against the Bulls. We're going to try to use that account a little bit more to just, I don't know, do stuff with during the games because why not? We have the account. That is all for Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, we will see you guys on Monday.